Hi, I'm Tim. I'm an alcoholic. Grateful to be sober, grateful to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't think anyone identified as new tonight, but if you'd be relatively new or used, I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous, and my wish for you is that you find what I found here and what I continue to find here, and that's hope. Because when I got here a little over 32 years ago, hope was not something that I was familiar with at all. Had a lot of other things going on, had quite a bit of desperation, a lot of anger, a lot of frustration. When I got here, I had been court-ordered not to drink. I hadn't had a license in a long time, although I still had cars and still drove. Just because they take your license away doesn't mean that you take away your ability to drive, right? I was technically homeless. I was living on mommy and daddy's couch one more time, because that's where all hip, slick, and cool 30-year-olds go when the wheels fall off. When I came in here, I used to say I was self-employed, but the truth is nobody would hire me. I was out of answers. I was out of ideas. I was out of people to burn. I was out of scams to pull. And as it turns out, that's a great place to begin your journey here in Alcoholics Anonymous, although I didn't see it quite that way. I was born to two loving parents who loved each other exclusively, at least to the best of my knowledge. I have an older sister, or had an older sister. And growing up, we had everything that we needed to be, self or well-adjusted kids and grow into well-adjusted adults and contributing members of society. And we didn't get everything that we wanted, but we got a lot of what we wanted. It was a good childhood. Couple of things. We moved around a lot. My dad was always getting transferred, and a couple of things came out of that as I learned how to fit into situations, new situations, and say what I think that you wanted to hear in order to get you to like me. And the other thing was is not to get like two people get too close, because sooner or later we're going to pick up and move on. I've noticed, after years in Alcoholics Anonymous, those are the chameleon-like tendencies that we all seem to develop, And I was also an anxious kid growing up. I probably could have used a drink long before I ever got one. I developed my first peptic ulcer at the age of four. What I had to worry about at 4 years old, I really don't have any idea, but certainly could have used a drink. And a couple of other things. I was a liar, cheat, and a thief right out of the gate, long before I ever picked up any alcohol or any of those, what do they call them now, outside issues or party favors or dry goods. Back then, we just called them drugs. I'm sorry if that offends you. I do believe in our singleness of purpose, but they are a part of my story. Had you asked me way back when, suggested that, hey, in 40 years you're going to be talking in a meeting up in Lancaster, maybe you shouldn't take those drugs. I probably wouldn't have listened anyway, right? Anyway, like I said, we moved around a lot, and I don't really remember my first drink. My family drank. My extended family drank. I do remember one of my first drunks. We were moving back here to California from the East Coast. We had spent a couple years out there, and we were moving back. We drove back here via Montana. My parents were born and raised on farms about 5 miles away from one another up in Montana. And my grandmother was having a family reunion, and that meant the whole family would get together, all of the aunts and uncles and cousins. And my grandmother used to make stuff into wine that probably should never have been made into wine. And my cousin and I stole a couple of bottles of rhubarb wine. And I don't know if you know what rhubarb is. It looks like red celery. It's kind of bitter. Again, it didn't make very good wine, but it got the job done. We drank those bottles down and still saving a seat for my cousin, by the way. But we got those done. One of the things I can also say, in addition to being like an anxious kid, I was always worried about the future. I was getting into a lot of trouble all the time because, again, I'm a liar, cheat, and a thief, and not always a good one, so I get caught a lot. And I defend those lies to the death, right, as we do. And so I was always regretting the past, worried about the future, never really able to live in the moment. And one of the things I did notice drinking those couple bottles of wine is I wasn't worried about the future. I wasn't regretting the past. I was able to be in the moment and to enjoy it. And it's funny because there's a passage in our book called The Promises that are read at a lot of meetings that comes like halfway after step nine. It actually says that, you know, we'll be amazed before we're halfway through. And it talks about things that Alcoholics Anonymous will bring for you, will happen for you. You know, we're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. You know, fear of economic insecurity will leave us. We're going to intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. Self-seeking will slip away, and we will grow interest in our fellows. Those things happened for me when I drank. And so in addition to that, it would seem to tamp down any fears that I had growing on. Fears of talking to girls, fears of, you know, talking to the boss, or fears of talking to anybody, really. And when alcohol does that for you, it's going to take a lot for you to give it up, right? Anyway, I didn't immediately put on a trench coat and grab a brown paper bag and go sit underneath a bridge and become an alcoholic, but I filed those feelings away for future reference, and I drank as often as I could, as often as anybody can when they're 13 years old. And I started getting in trouble at a fairly early age, too. So much so that I had my first intervention done on me in ninth grade. I don't know, I think I was probably 14 by then, maybe 15. Anyway, that was back, they had ninth grade, was still tacked on to middle school where I, down in Anaheim, that was before they moved it over to high school. And I had already been suspended 5 days for the maximum that you could be suspended for alcohol possession. I had got caught with alcohol at some school event. And I also had gotten 5 days suspension for possession of marijuana. And then a couple of days for fighting, a couple of days for smoking cigarettes. Anyway, long story short is they had a meeting to decide whether I should have to go to continuation school or be able to continue out my ninth grade year there. There's only like 3 weeks left in the school year too. But so they had this meeting, and there's the school principal and both vice principals, all three counselors and the school nurse, and then my parents. And they're talking about me as if I'm not even in the room with them, right? Talking about all of my bad behavior and, you know, how I'm incorrigible and there's no hope for me and blah, 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 blah. And if I would just apply myself, because I've got so much potential, I'm sure nobody else has ever heard the P word, right? Like Charlie Kearney says, I've got vast pools of untapped potential still to this day. Anyway, they decided that they were going to go ahead and let me finish out the school year, but a couple of things that I had that really meant a lot to me at that point in time is I used to play in the school jazz band, and going into high school the next year, the band director there made it clear that he didn't want me in his band and that I wasn't going to be allowed to do that. And that was also a time when they were making a lot of changes in school curricula. They had just passed Prop 13 and a lot of funding got cut out. And I decided that I'm going to test out. They have a GED equivalent where you can take a test once you turn 16, and that's what I did. And I started working full-time and hanging out with a bunch of older people, and that's okay because they can buy alcohol easily, and I can provide other things for them that they were looking for. And started on my merry way. But again, my drinking and my outside issue use caught up to me pretty quickly. Started getting trouble at work. Ended up losing my first real good job that I had. I've always been able to get a good job. You know, I clean up pretty well. I have the gift of gab. I can usually talk myself into a situation. But I don't know at this point if it's going to be, you know, the first paycheck or the second paycheck or the third paycheck where I'm going to take an unplanned, unauthorized vacation. And that was going to be my story for probably the next 12 years until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous for good. Picked up my first DUI. Back then we called them 502s. At the age of 22, that was in 1985, and that's where I got introduced to y'all, to Alcoholics Anonymous. They sentenced me to a 90-day alcohol education program, which I thought was kind of stupid because I knew how to drink, right? But then they also sentenced me to 6 Alcoholics Anonymous meetings and gave me a court card. And I remember it was probably about a month before I was due to turn that in, and I went to my first meeting. And it was a noon meeting at the old Fullerton Alano Club. And it was this crusty old house full of crusty old furniture and crusty old people, people that kind of look like I do now. And they're talking about losing things that I'd never even gained. There was no point of reference, there was no identification. And I was looking out on them and listening to them, and I'm thinking, well, thank God for you guys. You got sober just in time for the funeral, right? But again, like I said, they were talking about losing things, and I just wasn't identifying. I got my court card signed, and I'm looking at my court card going, yeah, okay, five more, one down, five to go, right? So I go to my next meeting. This was a speaker meeting at a local hospital. Neither the meeting nor the hospital are there anymore. But again, I got my my court card signed, and I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking, I could just do this myself, right? And folks, if you're on a court card, you can sign them yourself. Nobody really checks. Nobody really cares. The Al-Anons hate when I say that, but. No, just be smart about it. You know, maybe use a different color ink when you sign it and make sure the dates are sequential. And maybe have your buddy sign the one for you, that kind of thing. And that's what I proceeded to do every time I got a court card from then on out, and I was to get a lot of them. Very next year, I got my second DUI, my second 502, and then the next year after that, I got my third one. You can see kind of a pattern developing here, right? And they're sentencing me to more and more Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, but that's okay. I know how to go to those, right? You just fill out the card, and hell, I'll go to more meetings than you want me to, if that's okay, right? And again, now I'm having a lot more difficult time keeping jobs, keeping relationships. My family is pretty disgusted with me. My dad stopped talking to me. You know, I would, like it talks about in the doctor's opinion, there would be brief periods of sobriety where I'd kind of pull it all together and I'd set up a bright, promising future. I'd clean up, I'd get a job one more time, you know, maybe make a little money and maybe get another car, maybe get another her, maybe get another little place on my own, only to, once again, I don't know if it's going to be the fourth or the fifth or the sixth paycheck, but I'm going to go out a unplanned and unauthorized vacation and not come back. And or I'll, you know, get in trouble and get locked up for a long period of time. And employers kind of frown on that too when you're not going to be there for a long period of time. I also tried my hand at going to college. And I started studying electrical engineering at Cal State Fullerton, and I got all the way up to like my senior year. But the same thing's happening there is I just can't keep it together anymore for a long period of time. I could sign up for classes and I can go there for 1, 2, 3, 5, 6 weeks. But sooner or later, and the book talks about it, and every time I still hear it read, it brings tingles up and down my spine. It says that we are restless, irritable, and discontented unless we can again experience that sense of ease and comfort that comes at once with a few drinks. So I know what takes the big hurt away when I'm in a bad place and everything doesn't seem to be going right and you guys are all, you know, threatening and scary. That sense of ease and comfort that comes at once with a few drinks will always do the work. And speed up the story a little bit here. I picked up my fourth DUI in 1990, and there was a group back then that was lobbying Sacramento and trying to increase the laws for driving under the influence. It was called Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. And we had our own little group that was kind of anti-mad. It was Drunks Against Mad Mothers. But anyway, they ended up charging me with a felony driving under the influence. They sentenced me to 3 years in prison. I was court-ordered to get rid of my vehicle because it was deemed a public nuisance. And I was sentenced to 5 years of formal probation, and I was court-ordered not to drink alcohol for 5 years. And even my public defender thought that that was pretty harsh. It's like, what else has the guy got left? You know, let him drink, right? And the judge says, no, there's too much of a fear of him getting behind the wheel. We just think that he would be better served in society, would be better served if he didn't drink anymore. Now, I've since come to agree with that. That was a smart move on their part. But, you know, I was having a tough time with it initially. But I ended up, so I did a year of local time, and I had the rest of it hanging over my head. Actually, it was a four-year sentence, so I had 3 years hanging over my head. And I get out, and now I'm having to report to this person. I'm having to go down there and randomly test, and they expect me to either go back to school or to be gainfully employed. And I'm having trouble with all of this because now I'm not supposed to drink. And Clancy used to talk about being sober as like having this invisible spring in your gut that would just get tighter and tighter and tighter. And I get that. You know, again, there's that sense of ease and comfort that comes at once with a few drinks. And that's always parked at the back of my mind. It's still parked at the back of my mind today. I know what takes the big hurt away, right? But I'm going to try to play by everybody's rules, but, you know, I'm failing miserably. I'm not always reporting in because sometimes I'm go out and get drunk, and, you know, now my drunks are lasting longer. It's taking more and more alcohol for me. When I'm in the middle of a run, maintenance drinking for me is a handle a day, 1.75 liter bottle of whatever, usually whatever's on sale because I'm a thrifty alcoholic, right? Got to stretch those dollars. But there were a couple of points during that period where I was supposed to not be drinking and trying not to drink, but failing miserably, where I was just like, you know what, let's just end it all and, you know, start over somewhere else. I've always been more homicidal than suicidal, so I didn't mean end it all that way, right? That's a permanent solution to a temporary problem. But I had gotten a birth certificate from a baby grave off the cemetery in Brea, and I was going to use their identity, because they died when they were baby, and there wasn't any record of them, and go move to the state of Washington and start over again. But that was like a lot of my other plans that just never came to fruition. It sounded good at the time, and a lot of planning and a lot of talking about it, but no real action, right? Anyway, speed it up a little bit. I still had that time hanging over my head. And one more time, I got caught driving without a license. Wasn't drunk at the time, which was a good thing. But I got pulled over, and it was for a stupid reason, too. I went to an auto parts store, maybe about a half mile away from where I was living, and it had started to rain, and I didn't want to walk in the rain. So I jumped in the, because I've always got a car, right? Never have a license, rarely have a license. Never have tags either that are appropriate to that car. And insurance was long ago a thing of the past, that's for sure. But I got pulled over, and then I got stood before that judge again, and he gave me a choice that day. And he goes, you could either do the 3 years that you got hanging over your head in state prison, or you can try out this new program that we called house arrest for 90 days. And after some careful consideration down in the holding cell below the courthouse, I decided to take the house arrest. I mean, I was born at night, but it wasn't last night. Like 90 days, 3 years, yeah, so it's a no-brainer, right? But that was a difficult thing, too, because I'm an electrical engineer. So I could have designed a thing that would emulate the signal coming out of this ankle bracelet, and I could have gone off. But I didn't. I did it the way I was supposed to, and fortunately, or unfortunately, now fortunately, my probation officer at the time had gotten them to include as terms of my house arrest the ability for me to go daily to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, up until this point, like I said, I would sign my own court cards, and she also had given me a stack of court cards because she thought I had a problem with alcohol too. And I had been signing those diligently, you know, more often than she wanted them. But now I'm going to meetings, Alcoholics Anonymous, because it's the only way I'm getting out of the house. I'm not working. I'm not going to school. And so I'm going to a morning attitude adjustment meeting at this club that's about maybe a mile away from where I live, where I was living at the time. And then stopping at Albertsons on the way home, buying a handle again or whatever's on sale that week, and going home and just drinking the rest of the day away. And I'm thinking, this house arrest is not bad, right? Anyway, a funny thing happened during that period of time, the 90 days when I was going to these meetings. And I firmly believe that that'll happen for anybody going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, is I heard my story. There was some random guy that I'd never seen before, showed up at a meeting, and he was celebrating 4 years of sobriety at the time. And they took a stale muffin out of the counter, and they threw four matchsticks in there and torched that puppy and sang happy birthday to him. And I thought this was the lamest thing I'd ever encountered, but it's like, this is a new level of lameness I'd never even imagined. But they sang happy birthday to this guy, and then they asked him, well, how'd you do it? And he got up and he talked about a couple of things that made me sit up and pay attention. And it's not that the things in his drunken log were identical to mine in his situations or anything, but he talked about loneliness, and he talked about being desperate, and he talked about how alcohol was no longer really holding up its end of the bargain with him. And that had been happening to me for the last couple of years. Now when I drink, I'll eventually pass out, but it doesn't shut off the head like it used to. And there's a lot of times where I'm drunk off my ass to the point where I can't get up out of bed to go to the bathroom. Well, the solution is you just kind of go anywhere. You could always clean it up later, right? But my mind is like wide awake and sharp as a bell. And I remember everything now. And so the one thing that alcohol had been doing for me up to that point, that sense of ease and comfort that comes at once with a few drinks, wasn't happening anymore. You know, I was still getting drunk. I was eventually passing out, so it was turning off the head, but I wasn't getting the same kind of relief that I had been getting. And that wasn't all the time, but it was a good portion of the time, and it was unpredictable. So in those times when I think I was counting on it most to give me that sense of ease and comfort, it wasn't happening. And he talked about that, and I had never seen that guy up until that point. I've never seen him since. But I filed that away for future reference. Anyway, I completed the 90 days of house arrest and then got that ankle bracelet cut off me, went down to report to another new probation officer, and I went on what I hoped to be was my last run. And it wasn't the worst run I'd ever been on, but again, I was drinking, you know, half gallon, the 1.7 the handle a day. And this one didn't end like a lot of the other ones ended, with like me either being arrested or put in jail or in the hospital or just so physically sick that I can't go get any more alcohol. But I was getting ready to make my run over to Ralph's to buy whatever they had on sale that week. And I do remember it was Canadian Mist, one of your finer bourbons. And I could still taste that if I think about it. Anyway, getting ready to make my midnight run over there and pick up another half gallon, and I had a moment of clarity. See, I've always been a blamer. I don't know about you all, but anything bad that's ever happened in my life is always your fault or her fault or the parents' fault or my employer's fault or the police's fault or the judge's fault. It's never my fault. So how could it be? I'm perfect, right? Now, if anything good happens in my life, then it is my fault because I want to take credit for it, right? But in this moment of clarity, I saw my life for what it had become. And the truth of it is, nobody was holding a gun to my head saying, you need to drink this, you need to smoke these things, you need to pop these things, you need to shoot these things. And there's a funny thing about taking responsibility for your own actions. It's kind of empowering. Because if you're a victim, then you got no power over making any change because everything's happening to you, right? And I often thought that my given name is Timothy, so it's Tim for short, right? I often thought that should have been my middle name, and my given name should have been Victor, because that way I could have been Victim for short, right? That was bad. Sorry. Anyway, in addition to this moment of clarity and knowing that it wasn't anybody's fault except for mine, I also thought of a couple of things that I always thought that I'd go down in a blaze of gunfire or something by the age of 30, and here I was 30 years old, and I was just marking time until I got locked up again, and this time I was going to the big house. I knew that that was my destiny, and that was, nothing was ever going to change that, right? Just marking time until that happened. And I thought about those people in AA, and I dug through some stuff, and I got the number of a guy who had given me his phone number about a week or so prior to that in one of those morning meetings that I was going to. And he had told me, you know, when you get that ankle bracelet off, give me a call. You know, I hang out with a bunch of guys, we go to a lot of meetings, and we have a lot of fun, and that didn't sound like a lot of fun to me. But I heard his story, and he was like way worse than I was. He had actually been to prison, and he had done things that, you know, I had not done yet. And I figured maybe if he stayed sober, or was able to stay sober, he had just celebrated 11 years of sobriety at that time, that maybe, just maybe, he might be able to give me some tips or pointers on how to stay out of trouble. And so the next morning, the other thing that happened that night is I said a prayer. I said a prayer to a God that I wasn't sure existed. And if he did exist, I wasn't sure I wanted him to find me because I knew I had some things I had to answer for. But I said a prayer like, I can't live the way I've been living anymore. Please help me. And y'all didn't come rushing down with a dozen donuts and bring me a meeting or anything like that night. But I was able to sleep the night through without any alcohol. And I had not been able to do that for a very long time. And the next morning, I dug out that phone number and I called that man. And I said, Trace, I give up. You know, please show me how you stay sober. I can't live the way I've been living anymore. And he asked me if I could meet him at that club at noon for the new meeting. And I already knew. I was already starting to shake because I was having withdrawals at that point. You drink that the way I drink and you get separated from alcohol and you'll know it. And I said, I'm not going to be able to make it today, but I'll see you tomorrow at the noon meeting. And I proceeded to detoxify myself just like I'd done dozens of times before. And withdrawals were not pretty. When you're drinking water just to have something to throw up and you're throwing up green bile and sometimes flecked with blood and you're having alternating sweats and chills, and when you're having audio and visual hallucinations, and when you're having petite and grand mal seizures, you know, it's funny thing about withdrawal from alcohol is you can do withdrawals from narcotics or barbiturates and you'll wish you were dead, but it can't actually kill you. Alcohol withdrawals can kill you. It's no joke. Fortunately, we have a lot of places that are available for detox, especially in our larger metropolises, where we don't have to detox people the way that we used to. Anyway, the next day I met that man and at that meeting, and after the meeting we went back to his apartment and he told me a little bit more about his story. And that's where the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous started happening for me. You know, that language of the heart that we talk about, where one alcoholic relates with another. And he set me on a course of rigorous action, and that day was September 9th of 1993. I've not had a drink since. He told me the next day some guy was going to come, one other guy that he sponsored was going to come and pick me up at 4 o'clock, and we were going to go up to this meeting in Bellflower, and we're going to get there early and set up chairs. And I'm like, well, why do I have to set up chairs? I'm brand new. And he goes, well, just for a moment, you're going to get a spiritual pop where your head's going to come out of your backside and you're going to think about somebody besides yourself. And, you know, that's saved me to this day. That's always the answer around here, service work and thinking of others, getting outside yourself. Because even when I got problems today, you know, if I'm concentrating on you and trying to serve you and to see how I can help you, my problems either solve themselves or die of neglect. It's only when I like concentrate on fixing my own problems that's when they seem to get worse, not better, right? Anyway, that started me on my journey here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's been quite a journey. That father that had stopped talking to me, that was an uncomfortable relationship. Even when I was around him and we were forced to interact at like family events, he couldn't look me in the eye, I couldn't look him in the eye. And I would have thought that that was damaged beyond repair. He used to even keep a lock on his fridge in his garage out there because I used to like steal all his beer and stuff. And then he found out one day I was taking the door off the hinges to get to his beer anyway. He was not happy about that. But and I had burned them a lot. They bailed me out of jail one time. Big mistake, because I jumped that bail and they had to cover it in order to avoid foreclosure on the house. They just didn't know what to do with me. They really didn't. But I was a terror in their lives. I was a terror in anybody's life who touched me. And I wasn't sure, like I said, if that relationship was ever going to get repaired. But through the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous in our program of recovery in 12 steps, when that man passed in 2011, I had full power of attorney and I was executor of his estate. And I don't know of anywhere other than Alcoholics Anonymous where that kind of a shift happens in relationships. You know, if you think that you're in a relationship that's doomed, don't count anything out because miracles happen around here. You know, I'm not saying I'm a miracle. I tell you, Alcoholics Anonymous is definitely the miracle. And that's just one example of many of relationships that have been repaired in my life. I was able to go back to school because a lot of times when we get sober, we want to get free money from the state and we don't want to work, so get free money. And I went back and I completed that degree. And then I started working in my chosen profession of engineering. And I enjoyed it so much and I was so good at it, I ended up going back and getting a couple more graduate degrees on top of that. In that career that I got, and it was funny in retrospect, I was having a hard time getting a job because a lot of engineering jobs back in those days was either work defense contractors or with space programs, and either one, you couldn't be a convicted felon, which I was, and you had to be bondable, which I was not, at least not easily. And certainly they're not going to take a new hire, a fresh grad from college and want to go jump through a bunch of hoops to get you bonded. And so it was hard for me to find work, and I finally found a job with this little software company down in Irvine, and it turned out to be a great thing. It was back in the mid-90s, and tech was starting to boom back in those days, and my business card was changing frequently, even though my office was still the same. And there was a lot going on. When I got here, I owed my parents quite a bit of money. I went to go make amends to them. They had retired and moved out to Laughlin and went through the amends part. And then I finally said, well, now about the money. I know I owe you guys some money. And my dad goes, well, we just wanted you to be happy. You know, we're glad that you're sober and please just keep doing what you're doing, right? And I'm thinking, bonus, I got out of that one, dodged a bullet, right? But my mom goes, oh, not so quickly. And she goes out into the other room. She comes back with a yellow legal pad that she'd been itemizing things on. And I mean, she was accurate. She was an accountant, a bookkeeper by nature, and it was down to the penny. Turns out I owed them like $65,000, which back then was a lot of money. Well, it's still a lot of money, let's face it. But it's a funny thing, too, because when you're willing to make those amends, then the means somehow presents itself. And I got that career, and now we're making all kinds of bonuses, and I was able to pay that money back to them in a relatively short period of time. And when they did pass away, my dad in 2011, my mom in 2016, we were clear, we were current. You know, and they trusted me. They had their son. They no longer had the son that they got. They had the son that they deserved. And I was able to give them many years of that, thanks to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Things didn't work out so well for my older sister. She started drinking pretty heavily during COVID. She was working from home. Nobody's watching her. And even though she had a sober example of Alcoholics Anonymous in front of her that I had 25 years at the time, 20, even more than that, but she didn't want what we have. And she just drank herself to death. We did an intervention on her 2 years ago, right around New Year's, and put her in the hospital. And she was having failing liver, a condition called ascites, where you start developing fluid in your abdomen. And they were draining like 3 liters, 4 liters a day off of her, this fluid that was building up. And then she started having to go on dialysis, and she was in and out of a coma and was on a ventilator most of the time that she was in there. She lasted 100 days, and then her body just gave out. And that was a tough loss, because this is somebody that, you know, I had shared my entire life history with. She was my older sister. She was my concert buddy. We used to go to concerts together all the time. Every year we would go up to a bridge school benefit up in the Bay Area, Neil Young's benefit up there. And that was a tough one again. But I think that some of us have to die here in Alcoholics Anonymous in order for the rest of us to live. You know, I've had a lot of great things happen to me. I've had a lot of tragic things happen to me over the years. Buried a lot of people. That's what happens when you get old and you don't die. You know, I certainly go to a lot more memorials than I do weddings or christenings these days. Just this year, in my home group, we buried a couple people that were near and dear to my heart. I lost my grand sponsor, my great grand sponsor, Mark's sponsor. And but you know what? They went out winners, right? That's all any of us can hope to do. And I hope that that happens for me. You know, my days today, I'm doing the same thing today that I did when I was brand new. Try to be helpful to some and harmful to none. I go to 4 committed meetings a week. I have commitments at all those meetings, little jobs. I say yes to AA requests, even when they're not convenient. Now, I got to be honest with you. I didn't want to come up here today. I love getting asked. I love getting invited places. But yeah, when it came down to it, I'd much rather be home watching football. But I'm still willing to go to any lengths. I bought into this thing when I was brand new. I drank the Kool-Aid. You know, I am firmly committed to Alcoholics Anonymous for a couple of reasons. The first one is that anything that's any good or any use or any value in my life is a direct result of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the loving God that I found here. Left to my own devices, I'm a liar, cheat, and a thief just like I was as a little boy. The second is, had I not gotten sober, there's no doubt in my mind I'd be dead. That's just the way I roll. There's no way, and now I've been sober longer than I was alive before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. There's no way that would have happened. At the very best, if I were still alive, I'd be doing a life sentence in prison somewhere. And that's not much of a life. So those are a couple of good reasons to keep doing what I've been doing. I'm blessed to sponsor a number of guys. You know, they keep me on my toes. They make me act better than I feel most of the time, because they're always watching. They're definitely always watching. But that's been the blessing in my life. One of the great blessings of being sober is being able to help other guys and take them through the steps, sometimes kicking and screaming just like I was. But they come over to my house once a month, and we have dinner together, and then we go through a step out of the 12 and 12. And this year, we're doing the traditions as well. And I wouldn't have it any other way, you know. I'm going to go home tonight. It's going to take me a while to get there because it's kind of a far drive. But I'm going to lay my head on the pillow and I'm going to be able to sleep the night through without having to drink alcohol. And that's a good deal. You know, the house I'm going home to is not a mansion on the hill. There's no Maserati in the drive. There's no trophy wife waiting for me that's on the steps. Just a bunch of angry cats that want to be fed. But the truth is, I've never had it so good. I really haven't, and it's beyond anything I could have ever dreamed of. When I got here sober, you know, at the age of 30, I never thought I'd be a property owner. And like I said, it's not the best house in town, but it's all mine. They can't take it away from me as long as I keep paying taxes. You know, I had a great career. I was able to retire at a very young age. I was able to help my dad pass when he got sick. I was able to help my second sponsor pass when he got sick. I was able to help my mom pass when she got sick. I was able to help my sponsor's wife when she got sick. I was able to help my sister when she got sick. And now I think I'm ready to go back to work. But no, I'm blessed beyond reason. And you know what? If it never got any better than it is right now, I'm vastly overpaid. And so when I first got here, I wasn't sure if I wanted what you had. But I was tired of getting what I've been getting, and I was ready to do whatever you asked of me in order to change that. today there's no doubt in my mind that I want what you have, and I'm willing to do anything, still willing to go to any lengths to get it. Thank you for having me.